Episode 19. What is up? Another solo mission today. Got a few things going on. Mike's going on vacation. Mike's on vacation. If you listen to this, Mike is currently on vacation doing something on the beach or in a tropical climate. So I'm not mad at him at all. But episode 19, man. Picking up a little steam with the old podcast, which is pretty cool. I was telling a buddy. I got a buddy who his name's Aaron, shot me an IM over the Facebook, slid into my DMs. Said, hey, next podcast, y'all need to talk about this, this, and this. Which is cool. Thoroughly appreciate all the links that listen to the podcast. The only thing I would say is cool if you do. You know, if DM's how you're comfortable, that's fine. Or just throw it out there on the web, man. Stick it in the comments section, and we can discuss for the world to see. See what other links, have to say about other things we talk about. But one thing you wanted to talk about, and he struck my conspiracy theory nerve a little bit, tickled my conspiracy theory fancy, and wanted to talk about Hitler supposedly surviving World War II and escaping to South America somewhere, Argentina or Brazil. And won't get too deep into it because I think this is more of a topic that we need more discussion on rather than just me kind of floating my ideas, because we could go down that rabbit hole deep. But There's you can make a case that he did. You can make a case that that he didn't actually commit suicide, but he and I don't know, his wife or longtime girlfriend, whatever her classification was, escaped down to Brazil, South America somewhere, and that's where they essentially lived until they eventually died of old age. And I don't know. Like I said, there's evidence. It's hard to believe, though, you know, because the history books obviously said he committed suicide in the bunker. But the guy was no dummy. I think he knew he had lost the war long before that. Now, how he got there, that might be where it gets a little difficult, but I'm sure it's easier to get on an airplane back in 1940 something it is today. So I do think it is possible that he might have then. And what really intrigues me the most is when the Kennedy files were released earlier this year, or is it the end of last year? I think it was the end of last year when they were released. They actually mentioned something about Hitler being down in South America in that area. Now, the unfortunate thing is that I think they use things like that to do other things that they probably shouldn't be doing. And if you look at everything that surrounded the Kennedy assassination. Kennedy, there's a quote about Kennedy saying that he wanted to tear the CIA into 1,000 pieces and watch it scatter in the wind. He didn't like the CIA at all. And a big reason he didn't like them is because there were laws that basically allowed them to kind of go rogue and do what they wanted without any type of judicial or Congress or Senate or House or executive branch authority. And they did it under the guise that they wanted the powers that be to have plausible deniability for whatever they're doing. But whatever they're doing may get a little messy, but it was for the better good, whatever. And assassination on Castro attempts embarrassed the nation. We're back. Anyway, assassination attempts on Castro. I'm convinced to start a world war, a third world war. Cuban Missile Crisis was part of that. Kennedy didn't want a third world war. The powers that be did. And the reason is war is a moneymaker. You imagine that you tear a bunch of stuff down with war bombs and whatnot, and then you send in contractors to rebuild it. And that's just a money being made all around. And I think, if I remember correctly, the Bush family, HW, head of the CIA in Texas when Kennedy was assassinated, no doubt in my mind that that man had a part in it. But his dad, old W's granddad, if I remember correctly, is either W's granddad or great-granddad, actually was a banker that funded the Allies and the Axis power. Provided money to both sides. And no doubt that a third world war was what they wanted. Kennedy and the Cuban Missile Crisis basically backfired on him. He shot up to a 70-something percent approval rating after the Cuban Missile Crisis. A lock to get reelected in 64. And him and Robert Kennedy were probably going to run off LBJ on the ticket. And go their own, and then ends up being assassinated. So no doubt in my mind LBJ did it, or had a part in it, was a big orchestrator of it, and no doubt that he directed the narrative and the investigation afterwards. And there are a lot of guilty parties, and probably what is one of the biggest conspiracy theories out there. And if Hitler did die in the bunker with a self-inflicted gunshot wound, which we've all heard in history, it wouldn't surprise me if some shady characters made mention that he was possibly in South America, which gave them excuse to go down there and do something that they probably shouldn't have been doing, using it as a cover. I think Bin Laden possibly had the same thing. He was found in Palestine. Palestine was is linked to China. And this is just my thoughts, and I could be totally wrong, so take it for what it's worth, but Palestine's linked to China. Supposedly we had a stealth helicopter crash in Palestine, and what a better way to explain why we were in Palestine than to kill the number one most wanted terrorist in the world. Looks like a major victory, and at the same time, you're able to give a stealth helicopter prototype to a potential enemy. So, questions around that. I think it's fishy that the body of Osama bin Laden wasn't shown. And I could, it's understandable not showing the body, I guess. What I do remember, though, is that it probably took up too much news time than it probably should have. And I I just kind of feel that the questions around the helicopter were starting to get a little too real. And so we had a week-long news cycle of whether at the time Obama was going to release the pictures of bin Laden or not. And then they bury him at the sea. So, is he still alive? Don't know. Could he have possibly died long before? He supposedly died in the mission. I don't know. Don't know. I think he probably did die in Palestine in his compound, and brave men, SEAL Team 6, did a great job. So definitely don't want to throw all the shade towards the fact that he's not, because I do think some great dudes risked their lives to do essentially what was probably good for the world. So, but just something to think about. It's kind of weird that helicopter crashes and just got to kind of look to see if maybe we're being misdirected, I guess you could say. But like I said, that's a conspiracy theory in me. And if Hitler was indeed in Brazil, then we were lied to. Or if he was indeed dead in the bunker at the end of World War II, it wouldn't surprise me if we used his supposed sightings as a reason to go down into that area, which is around Cuba, and maybe cause a little mischief. But that's what it is. That's what it is. Speaking of that, Palestine and Afghanistan, the Middle East area, big opioid legislation supposedly coming down the pipe, which is good. I think there were the opioid production of Afghanistan before we went in there was around like 4%, and now it's 96%, and it's in painkillers. It's one of the most addicting drugs out there, one of the most detrimental drugs out there. And if you have time, man, I think it's on Netflix. Chris Bell, who I thoroughly enjoy, he did Bigger, Stronger, Faster, which was a documentary on steroids, which I highly recommend. Whether you agree with him or not, I think it just paints a real picture of him. And that way, at least if you ever get into discussion with someone, you're not sounding like one of those people who aren't educated. He does a good job, but he lost a brother, I believe, to painkiller addiction. He himself at the time was addicted to pain pills or opioids. And he did a documentary called Prescription Thugs. And I can't exactly remember the stat, but essentially I think America makes up like 5% of the world's population or something like that. Yet we account for 95% of the opioid use in the world. Some crazy statistic like that. I'll throw it on the bottom here so it's more accurate, but it definitely is a problem. It's an epidemic, and not promoting, you know, whatever your thoughts are on legalizing, you know, marijuana and all that, but it's dangerous. The opioids, I feel, are more dangerous than the marijuana or the weed, just because of the addicting nature. And I don't, you know, some people think weed's addicting, some think it's not. It's not really this discussion. The point being is that we have people sitting in jail because they've been caught with weed, yet there are people out there running around today with, in my opinion, a stronger, more lethal drug, and they're doing it 100% legally with the prescription written to them by doctors. And sometimes I think doctors, not all doctors, there's some great doctors out there, but over-prescribe people and they get addicted. And I think it's a problem that we're not addressing because we think it's all good, because why would a doctor or a pharmaceutical company do something that might hurt us? Why would they give us something that could be addicting and detrimental to our health? So terrible thing, but strongly agree that legislation against the opioid epidemic in this country is highly needed. Not saying if there are some benefits to it, maybe obviously taking care of it. I think my dad was on some, and I don't know the exact painkiller, but he's on the painkiller, and he was on it for surgery or something like that, and my dad says I don't mention him enough on the podcast anyway, so here it is. But he actually had to go, before he could get a prescription refill, he had to go do a drug test or something like that. And they couldn't refill it after a certain time. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
We're at intermission. I was just going to see what your day is going to be like tomorrow.
Work?
Well, I know, but I didn't know if you would be okay taking the kids in the morning so I could go in early.
I don't care.
Okay. Because I've got some stuff I've got to get done, and I have a stupid meeting at 8 o'clock, and then I have about meeting at 3:30.
Hey, you can go in early.
I just want to make sure it's okay.
Okay.
Right, do we need to come in the front door when we can?
No.
Okay, are you okay?
Yeah, you're interrupting it right now.
Oh, sorry.
All right.
All right, bye.
Bye. Anyway, back to my dad. I think he, he had to, he could only do it for so long, and then I think they had to measure his blood or his urine or something like that just to make sure that he was taking them as he was supposed to, which I think is good. I mean, I think that's how it should be. I think it's a problem. It's a problem. Like I said, Prescription Thugs is the documentary. Good documentary. Very interesting. It makes some very compelling points. And then the other thing is when you look at a documentary, you got to understand that, like, they're biased. They have an agenda. In this particular case, I think it's a good agenda. Like I said, he was addicted to them. During part of this, the making of this documentary, and I believe his oldest brother, or older brother died, with an opioid addiction and overdosed. And so I would tend to believe and think that there is a bias against the opioids in this documentary, but well deserved and warranted. But he, like I said, he just lays it out very, very well and interesting. And I don't like him. Last time I think I had him, I think it was when my wisdom teeth came out, and I think I took one. And then after that, I just don't feel good on him. So no. Obviously, it was just some wisdom teeth. So after a day of sleep and a mouthful of cotton balls, or gauze or whatever. I was able to get off of them, but I could see how people who are in extreme pain and that's the only thing that's really keeping them from that excruciating pain, I could definitely see how they could be on them long enough to get addicted to them. So if you do know somebody who's on that kind of stuff, man, just keep an eye on them. Watch that documentary, kind of get an understanding of what's going on. And I'm sure there's some alternatives out there. I like to think there's some pretty decent pharmaceutical companies out there that want to actually help people. But that's a whole nother conspiracy theory for a whole nother podcast. Interesting or surprising event this week in the sports world. Jonathan Martin, he used to play offensive line in the NFL, was good at Stanford, really wasn't that great in the NFL, nothing really worth talking about outside of the fact that after one season with the Miami Dolphins, he was apparently bullied by Richie Incognito. And if you remember Richie Incognito, who he's notoriously a jerk and you know, basically bullied this guy in the locker room to the point that he went missing with practice one day, and apparently he struggles with mental illness and depression and all that, but made an Instagram post with a picture of a shotgun and some shells and basically said, when you've been a victim of bullying, and when you're a coward and a victim of bullying, the only answer or solution or something like that is suicide or revenge. Then he had, you know, Incognito's name, I think the Pouncey guys, one of the Pouncey brothers was on there. Guys that were in the headlines for essentially bullying him in the locker room and all whatnot. His old high school was on there. Threat was taken so seriously. Obviously, this is right after the stuff in Florida in Parkland, that they shut the school down, sent everyone home, and now they have a restraining order. They went and arrested him. I don't think any charges were made, but obviously that dude needs some help. I think he's been pretty open about suicide attempts in the past, and kind of weird that they can go and take the precautions with this guy, yet there were red flags with another guy. And again, I don't know, man. It's just a lot of conspiracy stuff going around right now because there's a lot of stupid stuff going on in the world today. But back to the bullying thing, believe it or not, I was bullied when I was in junior high, and I was smaller and I was picked on a little bit, and it's no fun, man. It is no fun, to be picked on. And I don't mean picked on in the sense of people just kind of razzing you like buddies do. Cause, you know, I was picked on and punched in the arm and all that by friends and whatnot. And, you know, that's just normal kid stuff. I'm talking about just, I was spit on, pushed around, shoved around. I do feel that some of the dudes wanted to get more aggressive with the physical stuff. Like I said, I was smaller, and when I say smaller, I just hadn't developed. I hadn't hit puberty. All these kids, man, like, came back from summer vacation like grown men, and here I was still just a pipsqueak of a 12-year-old kid, and a 13-year-old kid, and you know, I moved on, and obviously it's not affecting me in the sense of I'm depressed like you know, Mr. Martin here, but it sticks with you. I can tell you, I remember the names of everyone who did it. And I can remember the little junior high faces, even though most of them look like grown men, I still remember their faces. And I do feel that if I ever sat next to them on an airplane or something, I would recognize them. And, you know, for me personally, it's kind of cool if I run into them again. Since I had a nice growth spurt in high school and I'm a bigger dude now, but you know, not everyone had that luxury of getting big later in life. And like I said, remember their names. It still sticks with you. And we hear about it all the time. And I can honestly tell you, man, when my daughter was born, my oldest daughter and my son, who's the middle child, and even my third daughter, but my two fears when my oldest two started school was A, that they were going to be picked on, that they were going to be bullied a little bit, and My second fear, and this is probably the greatest fear, and the one thing that I definitely didn't, I'd rather them be the victims of bullying than them be the bullies. That was another, and that's, you know, one thing that I've, and they're good kids when it comes to, they're boneheads sometimes, but I think for the most part, when it comes to treating the other kids with respect and all that, I think I do think. But again, we still stress it and ride it. My wife does a real good job about teaching them how to handle situations because it's not fun, and I would be extremely disappointed and mortified if I found out my son or daughters were the cause of someone's anguish. And the fortunate thing for me when I was being picked on was, you know, I had a bunch of great friends, and so it was very, very, very rare. You know, the time I was spit on, the time that things got a little physical, nothing too bad, just some pushing and maybe a Charlie horse in the thigh at best. But those were times that you know, very rare times that I was caught alone with one of these people and whatnot. And I remember specifically one time I got pushed into a corner and whatnot, and had a good friend come and jump on the back of, and this good friend was a bigger, stronger guy, and he jumped on the back of this other guy and then pulled him off, and they didn't find or anything, just pulled him off, told him to go on. And then that was it. I mean, I think that's probably why one of the reasons why it wasn't very severe for me is because, you know, I did have friends who watched out for me. But the other thing is, man, I always got to leave it. You know, throughout school, the teachers were good about kind of patrolling the hallways, so it didn't really happen there. Most of the time, if it happened, it happened before or after football practice in the locker room or weight room or something like that. But I could leave it. I could go home and didn't have to worry about it anymore until the next day. And even then, it was just rare occasions that anything would happen. Nowadays, you get people bombarded with this stuff. You know, they'll get text messages. These bullies will find out the cell phone numbers, shoot text messages. They'll make fake accounts on Facebook and harass them there. Shame on the parents. You know, you hear some of these bullying cases where the parents are involved with it too, which, how big of a loser are you if this elementary school, junior high school drama is so inviting to you that you feel you have to jump in it, that you feel that you need to include yourself in the charades of kids, of immature children. And, you know, and Corey and I talked last week when he was the guest host about gun control, and I made the point that, like, you know, I had 14-year-old friends that had rifles and would go hunt. They lived on acreages or they had deer leases, and they would go hunt with brothers and dads and all that, and they'd send a deer deer stand by themselves with their rifle and all that. And he talked about, you know, he didn't have an issue raising the gun laws. And I'm like, well, you know, some of these kids are good or whatever and could handle it. But then I started to think about it a little bit. And I don't know how you gauge maturity level. I'll just say it's a number. And you look at the maturity age of an 18-year-old right now is, let's say the magic number is 50, is at level 50. And you look at it today, well, what age should a person be able to buy a weapon like that, an assault rifle, is I think what we were talking about. And 21 is that thing, and I kind of thought about it, and I'm like, well, you know, when I was 18, I knew guys who had rifles and those kind of things, and they're perfectly responsible. But then I thought about it, I'm like, the average 18-year-old, and I know there are good 18-year-old kids out there, but the average 18-year-old is not as mature as they were when I was 18. And say when I was 18, the average maturity level of an 18-year-old was 65. And you didn't have a problem with that. If that maturity level of 65 were able to buy a rifle or whatever. And I got to that you know, realization that, like, maybe 21 is at a maturity, to maybe 21 years old today, 2018, is the same maturity level that a 18-year-old was 20 years ago. And maybe that maturity level, 18 years old 20 years ago, maybe that maturity level was a 16-year-old back in the 60s. And then maybe that maturity level, still the same line, but that was a 14-year-old in the 40s. And you think about it, you had 17-year-old kids going off to war. And I would put a rifle in the hand of a 14-year-old kid in the 40s, because those kids lived. I mean, they were mature. And so now, you know, after I think about it, I tend to agree with Corey now that I just don't think the average, and again, there's always the outliers on both sides, but I just don't think the average 18-year-old is as mature today as it was 10, 15 years ago. And so maybe it needs to be raised. That's my opinion. It may be wrong. You may be able to get on to me. Handguns, different story, like we talked about. But I do feel that it's a different world these poor kids have to live in. And I'm not knocking them for not being mature. I would not want to live as a teenager in this world today. You know, as someone who was bullied, I couldn't imagine going home and turning on my computer and having things pop up, people saying things about me or getting random texts and having those things shared with people or whatever. I mean, it's just, kids are brutal, and shame on the parents who allow their kids to do it. Double shame on the parents who participate in it. Wife was telling me about someone who was talking about how she's all worried that her daughter's popular in junior high. And you know, the thing is like, who cares? I mean, is your daughter a good person? Then that's all that matters. And whether a bunch of people like her or not, I think you're just naturally going to have, if she's just a kind person, you're going to have people that naturally like her. But it just shocked me how this particular grown woman was all worried that her daughter be in the popular crowd. And I think a lot of parents are like that. I think a lot of parents allow their, you know, they live vicariously through their kids and get carried away. And unfortunately, when you need someone to step in and actually be the adult, the adults in there instigating it are even more of a problem than the kids originally were. So, G-Man, if you have kids, just take it from someone who's been bullied before, man. If your kid's being rude to somebody, man, it's hard for me to describe the effect that puts on a child. And I like I said, I would be extremely disappointed and mortified if my children caused kids like that type of anguish and pain, because it's no fun, man. No fun. Like I said, so it affects people like Jonathan Martin. I hope he gets help. He needs it. But as like I said, someone who has endured it, I can remember the faces and the names, first and last name, of every one of those kids. And would definitely like to run into them in an airport or something like this one of these days. But and just have a talk. That's all. Maybe I just see their face. Hopefully I'm traveling Mike with his GoPro on his backpack to see the face as I reintroduce myself to him. And you know, you never know, man. And again, these were 12-year-old kids. If we're all judged by the way we were when we were 12 years old, we'd all be in trouble, I'm sure. Most of us would be, at least. But it'd just be nice to have a conversation with somebody like that. Who knows? Maybe this world-renowned podcast will reach those guys. I remember you. You know who you are. Nah, I'm joking. Anyway, man, this has been kind of a deep, serious podcast. And anyway, I was on Twitter this afternoon looking at what was trending, and there was a headline that said, "Utah Republicans rap video." That phrase should never be uttered. And if you watch the video, you will agree that phrase should never be uttered again. Utah Republican do not belong with the word rap. It is terrible. It is terrible. And in fact, I'm going to play it. You know what? I don't care if this YouTube video, you got to check out the YouTube video of it and actually watch the video. But I don't care if it gets content. I'm going to play the whole thing.
This is a story all about how
our bills get flipped into a law.
I'd like to take a minute and just sit right there.
I'll tell you how a bill becomes law, and this is our chain bag.
In a legislator's mind, an idea is raised.
In the law book is where they spend most of their day.
Drafting out, maxing out, hardly relaxing, all cool.
And all introducing bills inside of House chambers.
We're more than a couple of guys start reviewing the bill.
Are they making changes in committee on the Hill?
They may get in one little fight, but it's just because they care.
They say we're moving this bill back to the floor, and we'll argue it there.
Speaker Hughes whistles for a vote, and the answer is clear.
And the bill passes and goes over the Senate to hear.
If it passes the Senate, then the bill is probably fair.
You thought it was law, but it's just not quite there.
It goes up to the governor to determine its date.
And if it's good, Herbert might even be signing it later.
Look at that bill. It's finally there.
Sitting as law, ready to be declared.
right here. That video was awful. Awful. What are you doing? Like, who thought it would be a great use of taxpayer money to create that catastrophe? That's terrible. I'm under the my belief is that you really can't call like a song. Let's say, you know, Justin Timberlake's last album. I'm not a big fan. Now, I don't think you can call it garbage because I think there are people out there that really enjoy it. But me personally, just wasn't a big fan of it. Didn't like it. But I wouldn't go as far to call it garbage because I do think there are going to be people out there who do enjoy it. But I think you can say this is garbage. I think the consensus of everyone who watches this video can say it's garbage. And you got to watch it on YouTube. You can't just listen to it on this podcast. I would highly recommend that when you get a free moment, watch it on YouTube. I made it. It's a 90-second video, close to that. I made it through the entire thing for you guys. I wanted to talk about it for you guys. So you're welcome. And I don't blame you if you can't last it. But what I think's hilarious about this rap video by the Republican Party of Utah. Are there any rappers from Utah at all? It's to the Fresh Prince, to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air tune. It wouldn't surprise me if they just now heard that. That thing's like 25 years old. But it wouldn't surprise me if Utah just now heard the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song. I've been able to recite that thing for many years now. But they probably just heard it, thought that was a catchy little beat. Hey, maybe we can do this rap thing. Utah Republican Party. Sorry, citizens of Utah, man. That is a poor representation. What's funny about it is the older guys, and who you can tell are simply doing it for political reasons. They have no desire to be there. They have no desire to participate in this, but they would look like a grumpy old man if they didn't. So they're like, fine, I'll do it. And you can tell that the extent of them rapping is simply just tell me what to say. And they say it. They don't try and rap it. They don't try and do it with any type of feeling. They just look at the camera and say whatever they're supposed to say. That's hilarious. And those guys are the ones who got out of this looking the coolest. Those are the ones who got out of this with a shred of dignity. Are the guys who you can tell have no clue what it is or have no desire to do it. So they simply just say what they're supposed to in the same tone that I'm talking right now. Those are the guys who walk out with a little bit of dignity. That's this, I would say, if you could say there's a cool end of this spectrum on this particular video, that's where those guys lie. And then you have people all in the middle of this spectrum, and it's not a good spectrum to be on. The coolest guy is probably the guy behind the camera who's making this video to go viral. But then you got the guys on this end of the spectrum who are actually trying to rap, who you can tell are putting the effort into it. And I guarantee you the thought through their head as they make this video is, I think those guys think that they might have a shot at 8 Mile, is what I think. They think they really think that they could get on stage against the Doc and move the crowd. That's what I think they think. Yeah, they'll act like it was a joke, and no, they weren't doing it. But I guarantee, when they laid down this video, when they actually rapped for this video, they thought they were cool. They thought, you know, maybe I'll go. I want to know how many of those guys went home and put pen to pad and actually wrote down a few verses to see, you know what, maybe I could do, maybe if I could get a sick producer, maybe I can be the first rapper from Utah. Forget this political gig. I'm hanging out with Jay-Z and Snoop. You know, they're good white rappers, they're just not from Utah. And they're not Utah's Republican Party. Sorry. It was cringeworthy. The funny thing, speaking of rap videos, though, there's a dude down in Mexico, I think, that made a rap video. He's a street vendor that sells essentially bread. Pan, P-A-N, pon, however you say it. Is the word for bread, and I forgot the first word, vero or something like that. But it's just a pastry type thing that he's riding the bike around like what's his name? Napoleon Dynamite. Not Napoleon Dynamite, same director. Nacho Libre. That bike with the two wheels on the front, the one wheel in the back, and he's on nee, nee. Yeah, he's riding that bike around with his sweetbread or whatever in it, and he's rapping to the tune and beat of that Gucci Gang song. And if you know the title of the Gucci Gang song, you know 90% of the lyrics. It's a 4 or 4.5 minute song originally. Someone went in and took out every section that this dude said Gucci Gang in it. And it ended up being like a 39 second song. Like, it's the most, like, seriously, if that's what it takes to be a rapper, is uttering a stupid phrase an entire song, then I'm starting a rap career. Hands down. Because there is absolutely zero talent in that song. And if you're in the mumble rap stuff, some of it's catchy, and there are some pretty good ones out there. And I can't even remember the dude's name. That's how unforgettable this guy is. But the song Gucci Gang is terrible. It is horrible. But essentially this street vendor selling bread, man, took advantage of it, created a video and goes around and plays the song as he sells it, and I don't know if he's doing well, but good on him, man. It's a good marketing scheme. That definitely falls in the category that we say he made it better. He took a turd and made it better. The bar was set pretty low, but he still raised it a little bit with that song. But other than that, man, I don't know. That's it. Like I said, it's, you know, Utah Republican rap video. That's terrible. Like, honestly, someone honestly should have said out loud, I am a Republican from the state of Utah about to make a rap video. None of them said that. I guarantee you, not one of those people said that. Because I guarantee you, I am a member of the Republican Party in the state of Utah and I'm about to make a rap video. Yes, now that I say that out loud, that is a stupid idea. Dude. And you, here's the thing. You rapped about how a law is passed. Have you heard of YouTube? Have you heard of Schoolhouse Rock? If you're really trying to teach somebody how a law is passed, you just send them to YouTube to watch those videos. You don't create a rap video, I tell you that. I watched that video. There are no rappers in Utah. Utah is not, I don't know what kind of music comes from Utah. It seems too cold to be country. I don't know why cold and country just don't seem to mix with me. I don't know if there are any country singers from Utah, but it just seems too cold to have a country singer from Utah. So I don't know what kind of music they would play. But I can tell you what music they don't play, and that is rap. They do not rap. I don't know why it bugs me so much, but these self-respecting adults should have known better. Should have known better. Anyway, that's it. I'm going to wrap this one up. Talk to Jeff. Got some guests that, you know, some scheduling things that we got to get worked out, but going to have some guests on. Mike's got to get back from vacation. But definitely, like I said, definitely, you know, got people coming on. If you're a listener and you want to come on and you're interesting, I got to put that stipulation on it, man. I'm already boring enough. We don't need two boring people. But if you're interesting or have something interesting to say, hit me up. You want to be on it? Shoot me a text or put it, you know, put it on the public page, man. Like seriously, throw it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/. I think it's either Dewchain 88 or Top of the Dewchain. Either way, just put Top of the Dewchain in the search thing; it'll bring it to us. There's a picture of all three of our faces. Mike looking like Biggie on the top with a crown. Jeff looking just straight up rogue. I don't even know if that's the right word. But Jeff looks like that dude who, like, in the movies, in the picture, in this little black and white picture that we had, Jeff just straight up looks like that dude in the movies that doesn't, like, the popular kids don't like because he marches to the beat of his own drum. You know what I mean? Like that guy. Like the dude in 10 Things I Hate About You, Heath Ledger's character. Like, you know, I don't want to buy into the football, you know, Glee Club, whatever the kids are doing. I just want to be grungy in my band, not take showers and whatnot. That's what Jeff looks like. Yeah, you turn around and he ends up being the hero at the end. That's what Jeff looks like. Just that guy who's like, I don't care. Don't care. Got this grinning fool on one side of me. Got this dude with the crown up top. Don't care. Anyway. So yeah, look up that and let us know. Hit us up on Twitter at Dewchain88. Hit us up on the Instagram. And visit our website, topofthedewchain.com. You links, thanks for listening. You may have noticed, and I'm trying to coin this, and I don't care. I'm going to keep saying it. But I'm calling y'all links. If you're a Dude Chain listener, I'm calling you a link. Because you're a link. I know it's obvious and it's corny, but you're a link in the Dude Chain. And that's a good place to be. So as always, man, thank you guys for listening. We really do appreciate it. I really appreciate your feedback. Hit us up. Let us know what you want. Let's, you know, ask us questions, make comments, make fun of us. Whatever it is. Just hit us up, man. We like the dialogue. You guys are great. Top of the Dude Chain. I'm out.